This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
And good morning on this sunny, hot Saturday. No Seahawk practice today. After 2 days of practicing, they get the day off. They resume tomorrow. So keep you up to date on what's going on. There's a lot of stuff going on in the National Football League. A lot of stuff going on in baseball. Trades are coming down like mad. Let's get going with the headlines. So the Mariners lose last night. Another strange game against the Angels. They lose 4-3. Dee Gordon tries to steal home, gets caught, and the next thing you know, here comes Nicasio out there, and he gives up a run, and that's it. It's 1-6, and so the Angels win. They get the break in the sense that the A's lost last night, so they still remain one game ahead of the A's, but I think it's very concerning. Yet another three-run or less game for this team. I mean, this team is averaging 3.1 runs per game so far in this month of July. I guess you can say they probably want to get July over and get to August. They did make a trade and get a relief pitcher. He didn't pitch last night, of course, but they traded Seth Eldridge, a fourth round pick back in 2007, and I'll try to see if I can get this name right, because again, it's not the easiest. Sam Tuivasa was now acquired, can get the fastball up to 98. Got control over him for several years. So that's the first trade, and you know there's going to be more, so stay tuned for that. Other trades in baseball, and there are some big ones. Mike Moustakas ended up going to Milwaukee. Asdrúbal Cabrera ends up going to Philadelphia. So the trades are coming down at a very fast pace. I'm still stunned by Thursday, where there was like five trades, and most of them were the pitchers that everybody was trying to get, whether it's starting pitchers or relief pitchers. In football news today, Darrell Williams, a right tackle that was up on a contract year, he had to be carted off the field with a knee injury for the Carolina Panthers. That one could be very serious, but we don't know yet. A little too early to find out. Still two holdouts as far as draft choices. Sam Darnold, because of an offset language, he's holding out from the New York Jets. Roquan Smith of the Chicago Bears, he's now held out for about 10 days and has not been around, so that's discouraging for those. But those are the only two first-round picks. And really, it's not too bad as far as the holdouts. We know that Earl Thomas remains out. Sam Darnold didn't go. Khalil Mack did not go. A couple guys that are thinking about retiring, not there too. So those are some of the ones to kind of watch out for. And those are our headlines. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to JB in Renton. Hey, JB.
Hey, Mr. Clayton. How are we doing this fine Saturday morning, my friend?
Doing well. How about you?
Oh, doing great. You know, first things first, we've got to give condolences to one of the better offensive line coaches, that Tony Sparano.
Right.
I mean, that is just awful, Mr. Clayton. Did he have a heart?
56
attack,
years
Mr.
old, yeah. Had a heart condition. I guess a heart condition. I don't know if he knew about it, but he found out at the age of 56, and that's just so sad, right before the start of camp. And again, I guess it kind of shows the stress the coaches go under. But again, what a big loss. I know yesterday the Vikings did not practice. They went attended his funeral. I know a lot of Sean Payton and others went to go see him because, I mean, he was a very popular guy.
Yeah. Sean Payton and Dan Campbell, they both worked with him over there with the Cowboys.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, it's just awful. You know, a young man, too.
Yes.
56 years old.
A
young man.
Yeah.
You know, you were talking about injuries. What about the cornerback today? I mean, how many times has he gotten hurt over there with the San Diego Chargers?
I think he's missed something like 35 out of 60 games or something like that.
Wow.
Now, we're talking about Jason Verrett. Verrett, of course, blew out his Achilles doing a conditioning drill. And again, we're going to see a bunch of that over the weekend. That's beginnings of camp, two injuries start to come out, you know, a knee injury. And I think, you know, because usually it's non-contact in the case of Darrell Williams. And again, I don't know if it's a major knee injury or not. I know that they're real concerned in Carolina. Somebody hit him. And so that one can look. But again, there's going to be probably three or four ACLs, three or four Achilles over the course of this weekend.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, the Giants just picked up the kid in the supplemental draft, and he's out for the year.
Yeah, he suffered a shoulder injury.
Yeah. I mean,
and then, of course, you've got the situation in Cleveland. Josh Gordon didn't show up because he's trying to get his mental health right, and he's got anxiety. So he's staying away in a definite period of time. And Ricardo Luis was a wide receiver, and he hurt his neck, and so he's out for the season.
I know. It's just, man. I mean, you know, you hate to hear that and see that it's just, right at the start of the first week of the of training camp. Is it overworking as far as in the off season, or do you think it's not enough work as far as dealing with football, at least being football related?
Well, I think it's whether you had the right training before you either got to the OTAs or the camp, because what happens if you don't train your tendons, then you then have the possibility of tearing something, whether it's an Achilles or a knee injury. And where it comes down to is, like, whatever training you're doing, the shock to the body of now starting to practice, that plays a big role.
Yeah, it definitely does. It plays a huge part in that as well. Anything you're hearing from the first week of camps that has come out, Mr. Clayton, that has surprised you?
Not too much. I mean, when it's predicted as far as getting the deals done, it's not too bad as far as holdouts. I think that's somewhat encouraging. Everybody's, I think, now just concentrating on making sure that they can keep as many guys healthy. I think the one thing is, there seems to be more guys that they're cautious with. When in doubt, they'll go ahead and not necessarily put them on the practice field. I know today, I think it's like 14 Ravens are not practicing.
Wow. And they open up the preseason
on
game
Thursday,
too,
yeah.
Also, right?
Mm-hmm.
As far as the Ravens, yeah.
Against Chicago.
Against Chicago, right?
Right.
Yeah. Now, the one that really gets me is, it shouldn't be a big surprise, is the Allen kid over there, the quarterback for the Bills, who's getting a lot of first-team reps.
Yeah, but they're varying it. I mean, I think this morning Nathan Peterson was doing first-team. They're just kind of rotating it around. Josh Allen is not ready. He's not close to being ready. So don't read anything into that.
The only thing the reason I kind of brought it up is last year. You remember when they made the switch with taking Tyrod Taylor out, and I think
right.
Bringing the kid Pete. Yeah, and that's the thing that kind of it sticks in my mind, that are they going to do that this year as far as that's concerned with the Allen kid?
Mm-hmm.
You would hope not, but honestly, like that?
I don't know how good they are at the quarterback position right now. Because, A.J. McCarron is probably going to end up being the starting quarterback. Josh Allen's not ready. And anybody thinking he is going to be wrong. He just needs time. I think he can be a real good quarterback, but he's not close to being ready at this stage.
No, I agree with you there. I think if you put him out there right now, you're going to have a lot of trouble as far as having him out there on the field right now, as far as that's concerned. Does the running back with the Rams, Todd Gurley, his contract,
phenomenal.
How does that look for Le'Veon Bell?
Well, we'll see, because now, teams that are tight against the cap can't do anything. And, like a team like Philadelphia, if they're interested, they're not going to do anything like that, particularly if you've got building salaries and that. I think Philly has like 14 guys making $6 million a year or more. So I think it's going to be, he's that good, but, boy, it sure changed the market. And I'm stunned that the Rams did that, because remember, they don't have, I mean, they've got a lot of work to do. And if you're paying, close to $15 million a year for a running back, you have to probably pay $20 million for Aaron Donald. If you want to keep Marcus Peters, you're going to have to pay him about $14 million. And then you're probably going to have to say goodbye to Ndamukong Suh, Aqib Talib. They've got three starters on the offensive line that are up. So to take that kind of a bold move and pay him that kind of money, that could cause some problems.
Yeah, definitely. How about giving Brandon Cooks that kind of money?
I know.
And he hasn't even played a down for you yet.
Well, and I think in the locker room, that could create some issues because, let's say, okay, so you took care of two offensive guys, one who wasn't even on this team, and Donald and now Peters. I mean, he's like, how many are not taking care of the defense? That could be a problem.
Yeah, it definitely could be a problem. What do you think about Taylor Lewan getting that contract? What do you think about that?
It's kind of, it kind of goes where you sometimes see it. I mean, it's just that, big money it was going up. I mean, 15-5 was the last one, Nate Solder going to the Giants. And so now it's not, I guess, not surprising in that sense because, he was going to get it. So that's where the price goes. And you notice right at the same time, Jordan Matthews got done, Jake Matthews, with the Atlanta Falcons.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. He got picked up. I saw they picked him up. And Julio Jones managed to get himself a little extra money, which I don't blame him. You know, the reason I would say that with him, he's been suffering with considerable foot injuries all year for the last couple of years, maybe even longer. Since he's been in the league, he's been having that foot problem.
Right. In fact, I'm talking to somebody this week. I mean, what they're thinking, I mean, he's got that Calvin Johnson mindset. He might not take it too long. He might retire at the age of 30.
Yeah. Yeah, because, I mean, if it continues to bug him with his foot, he has 3 years left on that current deal right now.
That's correct.
I mean, you hit that third year or whatever, you might not be in the NFL that much longer.
No.
So it kind of made sense to me for him to have to go out there and get that done and get him a new deal because he needs it.
I think he's just kind of spinning his wheels. I mean, he didn't get any new money. I mean, new money was because all they did was give him a $4.4 million signing bonus. You know, they took his base salary down 1.5, and then they took, 2.9, I guess, out of next year's salary. So, you know, it's 2.9 in addition. Now all they did was move some money up, very similar to what they did with Antonio Brown.
Yeah, so they just advanced his, as far as that's concerned, they just advanced his cash right in front of him, and that's all they did.
That's all they did. I mean, he got no new money. None. Not a dime.
Wow. Well, what's going to happen with Le'Veon Bell?
He's going to go out there and probably miss the market somehow. I just think he has bad advice. I don't know if he had bad advice. I mean, I can't say he's had bad advice. Last year, his agent told him to take the deal, and he didn't. Now, this year, I don't know which one was which, but you're offered $15 million a year. Why don't you take it?
I know, especially for a running back right now. And I know you wanted to talk about his receiving prowesses and all that, which is fine and dandy. Mm-hmm. But, man, $15 million a year right now, I would take that.
Yeah.
And that's why I brought up the Todd Gurley situation. Would that reset things for him as far as what Todd Gurley just picked up?
I mean, we'll see. But now it's going to be on the open market because now, you know, you can say the market is at 15. But if teams don't want to get that market, I mean, they and remember, it's coming off the best running back draft in more than 10 years. There may not be a lot of teams looking for running backs.
No, that's true, too.
Hey, JB, got to run.
All right, Mr. Clayton, next Saturday, my friend.
Okay, sound good. 866-979 ESPN 206-421 ESPN. John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
866-979 ESPN 206-421 ESPN. Let's go to Raider Jim. Hey, Jim, how are you?
Hi, good morning, John. How are you?
Good morning.
Yeah. John, so I've got a question for you with regard to the Martavius Bryant situation with the Raiders. I mean, there were rumblings before camp that he may end up getting another drug suspension.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any protocol with regard to that and how the NFL reports that to teams? And if so, do they do it at certain times of the year?
No, technically, it's between the player, the agent, and the league, and they're not really even supposed to tell the team. So sometimes the team can be just surprised. I mean, you saw this in baseball with Robinson Cano. The team had no idea. So technically, unless there's some kind of violation or somebody leaking it, the team's not even supposed to know. Now, if the player lets them know, then it's a different story. But the protocol is it's between the agent, the player, and the league.
I see. So then maybe I should rephrase. Is there a protocol with regard to timing as far as when the NFL season starts, when league camp starts, when, games begin?
None. No, it can go at any time. I mean, you can see that, you have a test and you can test negatively or you miss a test. Because, again, missing a test is the same as not having a bad test. You get flagged for the same thing. So you can have your appeals process, and sometimes the league will leak it out. Sometimes they won't. In this case, we still don't know if it's true. We really don't.
Right. Yes. Yeah, it's just been rumblings and whatnot, and I think one or two reports, and that's been it.
Mm-hmm.
But boy, it's just sure to take a wildfire for about 2 days, and then it just died down, and nothing's really happened since. And so, of course, he reported to camp, and everything's all, as far as everybody else knows, okay so far.
Right. But we just don't know at this stage, so it's just kind of waiting it out to see.
Right. With regard to Khalil Mack, John, and the Raiders, a lot of this reporting has been much ado about nothing. I mean, Schefter comes out and says that, Gruden hasn't spoken with Khalil Mack. And
yeah, but again, what does that mean?
So what?
Exactly. Yeah, because listen, the coach is not supposed to be talking to the player about his contract.
Right.
I mean, that's Reggie McKenzie and the cap guy.
It's just such a bunch of poppycock, frankly.
I know. That one doesn't settle with me.
Yeah, I am with you there, John. It just, who cares? That's to me, that sounds like, you know, like, yeah, that's the way it usually is. And moreover, you know, Gruden has bigger fish to fry. He's got to take care of other things.
Right.
You know, the technical side of contract negotiations and all that, that's going to be the GM. Reggie McKenzie's going to take care of that, in my mind, John.
100%. Yeah, that's why you hear that and you go, what are we talking about here?
Yeah, and then the other thing that just, you know, look, Khalil Mack is not going anywhere. You know, he's still getting paid on his rookie deal, close near what, according to Over the Cap, what, $14 million?
That's correct, yeah, 14.2.
Yeah, okay. And then okay, so let's say they don't sign him to an extension. Big deal. They'll franchise him if needed, and mm-hmm. that'll be anywhere from, what, 20 to 22 million? I mean, depending on the year, they could do it this year or the following.
I'd say it's going to be the cap, I think, is going to go up to 20 million, 200 million next year. And the reason for that is it goes from 46% to 47%. It's been 46% the last 2 years. And so it goes to 47. And if the revenues are going to be somewhere in that $15 to $16 million range, I counted out at about a little over, I have it at 20.7.
Yeah, I think the more, and so in other words, Mac is not going anywhere, folks.
No.
And I find that hard to believe that people think that. And you know, I think the more interesting wrinkle, and you talked a bit about this on your show and with your colleagues on the station, I think the more interesting wrinkle is now that Todd Gurley has signed his deal as a running back with the Rams, what that does for Aaron Donald, because he was kind of like, you know, both of them were playing chicken, Donald and Mac. They were both saying, okay, who's going to get signed first? Because I want to get signed for more money.
Mm-hmm.
You sign first, and I want more, kind of thing. And that happens a lot. We saw with the Derek Carr contract when he signed, and there was some other quarterback that got signed for even more money. So I think that's the interesting wrinkle. And I think Donald Penn's contract also has some time limits on it, doesn't it, John?
Well, he's on the PUP list because of a Liz Frank injury, and you know, you'd have to think that he could be in danger of not making the team, because at some point, when you start getting all these big deals,
I misspoke. I meant Aaron Donald.
Oh, Aaron Donald, yeah.
Aaron Donald of the Rams. I'm sorry, yeah. That's what I meant, Aaron Donald, as far as, you know, now Todd Gurley's been signed, what wrinkle that has on the Aaron Donald negotiation with the Rams and how that influences the Mac contract.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I think it's which one blinks first, because
exactly.
The one that blinks first is the one probably going to get a little bit less. And so that's why the agents, I think, are being very cautious in which way they're going and trying to be a little slow in getting it done. But again, they're losing money in the meantime. Of course, the team can elect not to collect any of the fines and all that stuff. That's up to the team. And you would have to think under the goodwill, if they can get a deal done, they won't. But it's $40,000 a day, and you can lose and have to repay some of your signing bonus back.
Uh-huh. What do you think about the rationale that this would prompt Aaron Donald to make a deal with the Rams because of the Gurley contract? He probably wants to get signed up sooner than later. What do you think?
You would think so. I mean, if you've got the $20 million a year coming to you and maybe $45 million guaranteed, I think you want to get it done sooner or later. But like anything else, it's not sooner. And so these are big deals. I mean, these are groundbreaking type of deals that are getting done. So yeah, just
and didn't Aaron Donald hold out a bit last year in camp?
Yeah, he did hold out.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And then any veracity to the Earl Thomas stuff about him coming to the Raiders? I don't think there's any at all.
No.
Okay.
Let's put it this way. If they can't get something done with Khalil Mack, which again, they'll get it done. He's too important to the team. You know, do you think they can afford a safety that eventually is going to cost them $13 million?
Yeah, right.
Remember, they still have to do something with Amari Cooper next year. You know, they got $40 million a year tied up in their top four offensive linemen.
Indeed. Indeed, John. Yep. It makes so much sense. I appreciate you. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Jimmy in Seattle. Hey, Jimmy.
Hey, John. How you doing today?
I'm doing good. How about you?
I'm doing great. Hey, John. I hate talking about this kind of stuff, but we got to talk about Jerry Jones' comments this week. They were flat out ridiculous. He sounds like an idiot. First of all, he was one of the owners that voted for the new policy about letting the players stay in the locker room for the anthem if they don't want to go on the field.
Mm-hmm.
So now he's telling the media in the world that if his players stay in the locker room, they'll basically be cut or they'll be suspended. What's up with that?
Well, it's interesting because I think the initial reaction is exactly, because I had the same reaction as you. It sounded like Jerry was bullying everybody. But I don't know if they put it to a vote to the players, but Dak Prescott and a couple of the other players came out yesterday and said, no, we've agreed to do this. And so it doesn't sound as bad as it initially sounds. Now he may have bullied him to get that decision, but apparently they're in kickstep with him, and because of that, it looks like they're all going to stand. They're all going to respect things. So I don't know how he got that conversation going, and I don't know if he had to do something in return to get that done. But apparently the players are now endorsing that idea.
John, we all know why Dak Prescott's endorsing the idea. The guy's up for a big contract at the end of the year. You think he's going to try to ruffle any feathers? The guy, I listened to his comments yesterday. He sounded like a bigger idiot than Jerry Jones. Mm-hmm. He's trying to say that Kaepernick didn't make any impact with what he was doing. Has he even tried to do any research of what Cap's been doing with his time and his money since he's been out of the NFL? You know, he's literally donated over $1 million to 12 different charities.
Right.
None of these. What is Dak Prescott doing? What is Jerry? And John, it really bugs me. And then you have the thing with Stephen Ross saying that potentially players, if they kneel, will be suspended 4 games. So you're telling me Jameis Winston can sexually assault women? He can potentially, and he can only get 3 games? Where's Roger Goodell on this? Why is he just hiding? Is he going to come out and make some kind of statements and condemn some of his owners, or is he just going to let...
Well, here's the bad part. Now, Stephen Ross didn't say anything. The reason that came out, there was a 9-page document that went to the players talking about the fines and saying that the national anthem is under player conduct, and player conduct, you can suspend somebody up to 4 games. It wasn't that was their decision, but that was all in there. But that's where I agree with you. The problem is the league has just made this a mess, because instead of coming down with one, finishing negotiation with the players to come up with a resolution, they just had them. They met yesterday and they got nothing done. That was the first time that they met. But also having 32 individual teams making their own decisions, this is the problem that you have. I mean, there's one decision to make, and that is to have all the players in the locker room when they have the national anthem. They get ready for the game. They come out after for the regular introductions, and that's it. That's the way it was before in 2009. That's the way it should be now. This is too much of a mess. And, I can hear your anger about it, and I endorse the anger about it, because it shouldn't be. They shouldn't have this controversy. Take it out of the equation.
Yeah, John, let's get to football real quick. So, obviously, Gurley signed the 4-year, $60 million contract with the $45 million.
No, actually, I caution everybody, when a deal comes in, understand it's going to be pretty well leaked by the agent. Okay, and the agent's going to glorify something, and so it turned out. And again, it's upon signing, because if it's an injury guarantee, you have to be injured to get that money. All right, so it's actually 21 guaranteed.
Okay, so you don't think he's really going to get the 45?
No, he's not. Well, I mean, he'll get the 45 as long as he plays.
Okay, well, John.
But again, it's 21 million guaranteed upon signing.
So John Mara came out this week and obviously was asked about a million questions about Odell's contract. When are we going to see something with Odell? I mean, the guy has not held out. He came to minicamp. He came to OTAs. He's been in training camp. When you saw how bad the Giants offense was, John, I know you don't advocate signing a receiver to $20 million a year, John, but the Giants offense was completely horrible last year without Odell. When are they going to pay this guy?
Well, I mean, they've now started negotiations, and so these deals sometimes take time. I mean, that's just the reality. These deals are not done overnight, and so they get done when they get done. I mean, when you think about it, just like the 215 draft is now up. 215 draft has 9 guys that have contracts and second contracts with their team. It just takes time to do it, and particularly groundbreaking type of deals. You see this with Aaron Donald. You see this with Khalil Mack, and now you're seeing it with Odell Beckham Jr. But they're going to try to keep it as close to 17 as they can, and naturally he is going to be shooting for 20. So, but the deal, at least they're on the same page right now. He's there, they're talking, and they both want to get something done.
Hey, John, one last thing real quick. So, obviously Earl Thomas isn't in training camp, and it looks like he's going to be not in training camp for a while, if at all. So I don't get what John Schneider and Pete Carroll's thinking is on this. If they're not going to give him a contract extension, then why didn't they trade him, or why are they not going to trade him? I don't get.
No, this one's actually pretty easy. Okay, and Jimmy, yeah, just listen, here's what the rationale is. They don't know if he wants to be there or not. He hasn't been there, and of course, he's the one who chased down Jason Garrett and said, come get me. He's the one who said he was going to hold out, and he's holding out. And what they don't want to have is, you know, they can't offer and talk contract until they know where he is as far as his interest in the Seahawks. I mean, you know, they don't have Richard Sherman or Michael Bennett because, you know, they thought that, you know, those guys just weren't all in, and they want all in. And so until they can find it out, I mean, if Earl Thomas comes in, stays a couple weeks, they find out that everything's okay, then they can start talking contract. But they really shouldn't talk contract until they know he wants to be here or not. And, you know, remember they said right before the OTAs, I guess, that they weren't going to talk contract because he was going to hold out and not be there. You got to be there to start getting the contract. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Gary Hill coming up next to talk some Mariners. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
And joining us right now, Gary Hill from the Mariners broadcast, and still getting a little scary right now with the way the things are turning. Oakland just now being one game back. They lost last night. Close game, tight game, but a tough loss against the Angels last night, Gary.
It really was. That was a heartbreaker. It's they had a lot of chances during the ball game. Actually, you look at their offensive day, I think you give the Angels a ton of credit. They played some really good defense, including an Albert Pujols diving play at first base that probably saved a run that I don't think you were expecting. But lots of exit velo last night for the Mariners, just not a ton to show for it. Now they'll try and still a chance to get the series, but they'll have to get the next two to do it. And you're right, things are very tight now with the A's and the way they're playing. They've been great.
Yeah, they really have. I mean, are they for real, do you think?
So I don't think they're as good as they've been playing lately, but they're good. They're a legit team. Their offense has been outstanding. You look at the numbers, especially on the road. They had such a weird season. If you just isolate them on the road, they're the best team in baseball offensively. They've really struggled at home, but they have a power-packed lineup, a good lineup. Their bullpen is filthy, especially the back three now with Familia being added. I've had questions about the rotation the entire season. They've had a ton of injuries. A lot of things haven't gone right in the rotation, yet they've been able to overcome it. I mean, it's been patchwork at times. I mean, Edwin Jackson's in the rotation, a guy that's been around forever on a million different teams. And, you know, through his first five starts, he had an ERA under three. So that they have some things going their way that you wouldn't expect. But outside of Manaea, they just haven't had a lot of consistency in the rotation. I still think in the long run that's going to hurt them, but they've been able to overcome it with their offense, especially lately.
Well, they've got six starters, position players that are 28 years old or younger, and it seems like they're coming on at the right time. How good is that group of six?
I think it's pretty good. It's going to be interesting to see where their ceiling is on some of them. You know, Chris Davis is, you know, that guy bashes home runs constantly, especially against the Mariners. I really like Chapman, especially defensively. He is a great defensive player at third base. And you know, we've talked about it, Kyle Seager probably having his best defensive year at third base. And Seager's a guy that's won a gold glove. And that bore out on the Saber rankings just come out. Seager's in the top 10 defensively, regardless of position in the American League. But Chapman's number one, and he's on his way to a gold glove. He's playing great baseball. They have a very intriguing core, and it was interesting. You know, we had the debate a few weeks ago talking about, you know, the A's and Astros, and, you know, the A's were on the cusp right there. If they play well for a couple weeks, they're in this thing, and buyers, if they struggle during that couple weeks, they're probably going to sell. But, you know, they played well in that two-week stretch, and they've really continued. It's a really good core. It's a really good group. You just wonder about the pitching, especially the rotation moving forward.
Yeah, but of course, I mean, the one thing you wonder is that they do have prospects in the minors, and they could make a trade or two.
Yeah. No, they could be more active. I mean, Familia was a big get for them. I know there are a lot of teams that would love to add a pitcher like that to the bullpen. They could certainly still be active here in the next few days as we get down to the, we get down to it. This is always an interesting time of year. It's going to be interesting to see what they do. They could really use another starter to add to the mix, but that is easier said than done. Every team outside of probably Cleveland and Houston would love to add a starter, but there's just not a ton out there right now, and if you try and land one, you're going to have to pay big.
Yeah, and what did you think of the last 3 days? Because what is supposed to be the deadline coming up in the 31st, looks like everybody's jumping the deadline, because I know Thursday I was over at the Seahawks, and you know, like four trades happened in the morning, and you know, many of them for the pitchers that everybody was going for.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of activity here the next few days. Speaking of that, I think the most interesting and intriguing team right now, the Yankees, and we've talked so much about the Mariners and A's for good reason, with the A's playing so well, but the Yankees have really struggled lately. They do add Britton, they add Happ to the mix, but at the same time, they lose Sanchez for an extended period of time, and now they lose Judge for the next few weeks. Coming into last night, the Mariners and A's, you know, 4.5 back and 5.5 back of the Yankees, who lost again last night as well. I think the next few weeks are pretty intriguing with the Yankees. The Boston has opened up the lead on them, but I think if they are gettable for the Mariners or Mariners or A's, depending on how they play in the next few weeks. I think this is a very interesting stretch.
Oh, no question. And that's one you hardly even think about because they had such a big lead. But that's the thing that's so unusual, because I think this has been one of the more unique American League seasons. Because, again, it compares in many ways, I say it too many times probably, to like the AFC, like the current state of the AFC. There's so many bad teams. There's so many mediocre teams. And you really don't have a lot of real good teams, so the schedule plays such a big role that you can have these stretches. I mean, like for example, one of the things with the going on with the A's, you know, they were 4-9 against the Astros. Okay, that's bad, but the good thing for them, they only have 6 games left. The Mariners, they've got 13 games left against the Astros.
Yeah, no, you make a great point. They have to play Houston a ton more, and a lot of that coming up. I mean, you look at the road trip coming up after the Mariners return home. They play Houston in the homestand coming up. And then the road trip after that, the Mariners play the Astros and the A's in the same road trip. So Mariners have their destiny in their own hands. I mean, they're going to play Houston a ton the rest of the way. They're going to play the A's a lot the rest of the way. So from that perspective, I mean, it's going to be on them. I mean, they have control of their destiny because they will see the A's and the Astros a lot the rest of the way. In fact, you look at the schedule, and the road schedule is pretty interesting. It's really almost all division.
Mm-hmm.
A random series against the Padres and a random road series against the Diamondbacks. Outside of that, it is all the division the rest of the way on the road.
Is that good or bad, do you think?
I think it's good in terms of travel. I think the toughest travel portion of the season is out of the way. I mean, Houston and Texas, that's not a short trip by any means, but it's nice when you don't have to deal with the time change or anything like that. So in that regard, I think it's really helpful. And I'm always a fan of having destiny in your own hands. So just from that perspective, the competitive perspective, if you're battling with the A's, you have a chance to go out and beat the A's and take care of business yourself, which I love.
What did you think of the trade yesterday?
I like it. I mean, it's classic Jerry DePoto, right? A name that we had no idea. I don't remember anyone bringing
We have
that
trouble pronouncing.
I mean, right. I don't remember anyone talking about him at all in any sort of mix, and here he is going to be a Mariner. I think he's very intriguing. The velocity is intriguing. He has dominated right-handed hitters so far this year. And the kind of guy that we talk about that Jerry targets, a guy that's going to be under control for the next few years and seemingly will be a part of this bullpen for the next few seasons.
What a tough outing for Nicasio last night. Again, he continues to struggle.
Yeah, it was good until it wasn't, right? I mean, he went through the ninth inning, good form, looked good, good velocity, and then gives up
one swing of the bat, the home run to end things. So it's really been an up and down season. Colomé has really steadied himself quietly, I think. What is that, 11 straight appearances without giving up a run? I think that's a really good sign moving forward. But, I mean, for this bullpen to be peak at its best, they need Nicasio to round into form. At the same time, you look at a game last night, and they got to find a way to score more runs, and that's kind of been the theme of July. You look at it, they won 9 of 10 at one point before the 6th of July. They were scoring over 4 runs a ball game in that streak, going 9-1. In their recent stretch, where they're 5-10 in their last 15, they're down a run a ball game. They're scoring just over 3 runs. And when we've talked about the Mariners playing so many close games, winning so many close games, that one run can make a huge difference, because the pitching has been the same. It has been incredibly consistent throughout the year. You look at the month of July, the ERA is below 4. But that one run a game is making a huge difference. And you look at it this month, Cruz has struggled, just a couple of home runs and batting above 200, and same with Haniger and Segura. So you kind of look at the All-Stars, and you'd love to see them get it going and get that run back, because they really, 4 runs a ball game, I mean, that's kind of the magic number for them.
Yeah, no doubt. And that's, and what this month, I think it's 3.1 runs a game. I know before that 8-run Sunday, they had 15 games in July and had 43 runs scored, which is actually less than 3 runs a game.
Yeah, and that's the difference right now. I mean, that's really the difference, because the pitching has been really consistent, especially the rotation. They've been consistent. They've kept the Mariners in ball games, just that one run. And it's really a combo of things. They're not getting on base a ton. They're hitting for a low average, and they're not doing a lot of damage. You look at the month in July, and they haven't hit many home runs, last in the American League. They haven't hit many doubles, last in the big leagues. So it's the combo of, you know, not getting on, not hitting for average, and not doing enough damage when they do.
And I guess what type of things has Edgar Martinez and Scott Servais done to try to get things going with the bats?
I mean, they're constantly working. They're always working with those guys to try and square things away. It's one of those unfortunate situations where they just have a lot of guys cold at the same time, which is, it happens from time to time. It's just unfortunate. I mean, you'd have to think. I mean, Nelson Cruz scorched a couple of balls last night, including the home run. I think that's a really good sign moving forward. Haniger is seeing the ball well. You look at his on-base percentage, it's pretty solid. He's getting on base. You'd have to think that he's going to get it going. And Gene Segura, you know, he's not going to be cold for long. So, you know, with just that core of the offense, you feel like it's going to turn around quickly. You add Cano to the mix in a couple weeks. I think that's really going to help as well. And then Gordon, you know, 3 hits last night. He's starting to pick it up as well. I think the top of the order is really key. So I think in the near future, it will turn around, hopefully tonight. But they need to, you know, as we talked about with the A's in the rearview mirror right there, the sooner the better. No doubt about that offensively.
Hey, Gary, thanks for joining us.
Oh, anytime. Great to talk to you, John.
Gary Hill joining us here. And, of course, we're taking your phone calls at 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN, John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Clay. Hey, Clay, how are you?
Hey, pretty good, John. Huge fan. Thanks for taking the call.
Well, thank you.
Hey, I got a question for you. I hate to beat a dead horse, but I haven't heard an explanation on what exactly is the difference between the Cam Chancellor holdout and the Earl Thomas one. I know when Cam did it, Earl was so outspoken about how bad it was for the team and whatnot. Now, is he just being a huge hypocrite, or is there a difference? Or?
Well, understand with Earl, whatever he thinks one day may be different the next. I mean, but he's a free speaker, so his, you know, whatever he feels that day is what's going to come out of his mouth. And, you know, he's going to be an open and honest, and so back then he felt it was kind of anti-team. Right now, you know, he's taken the fact that, well, maybe the team doesn't want me. because they're not offering a contract. But the problem is that the team doesn't know if he really wants to be here or not. And I'm not talking about the players, and you know he loves playing here and all that. But, you know, does he buy in on where this team is? Because right or wrong, the Seahawks felt that, okay, maybe Michael Bennett did not and Richard Sherman did not, because, you know, those guys are proud guys. They want to go to championships. And if they don't think this is a championship team this year, then maybe it's not the right thing for them to go all in. And they don't know if it's all in. So in this case, it's different because, what, if I'm right about this, I mean, Cam showed up. I mean, he was there in training camp. It was just, well, no, he wasn't there in training, but he held out the two games. But yeah, I don't know if you want to call him a hypocrite, but certainly what he's saying now is different from what he was saying when Cam held out.
Yeah, absolutely. Just seems, I mean, I get things change, but seems very hypocritical. But hey, these guys are human, I guess.
But that's the one thing. Understand this about Cam Chancellor. He's different in how he handles things. He's very intense, and what he may say one day is going to be different the next. That's just him.
Yeah. All right. Well, I just wanted to get your take. Thanks a lot.
Okay, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.